Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you from the English service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington, D.C. Angola's main opposition, UNITA, plans to petition the National Electoral Commission for a recount of the recent general election.
There was a lot of irregularities in this electoral process.
Kenya's former Prime Minister Raila Odinga and his running mate Martha Karua ask the Supreme Court to dissolve the Independent Elections and Boundaries Commission.
In 2017, there was the same issue raised with regard to the organization of the election that was annulled at that time.
And a new app aims to provide local farmers in Ghana with information on marketing and sales.
The Duapa app basically puts together a coalition of farmers inside the app to have a marketplace inside the app, whereas though the farmers can then now, you know, put their farms on the app.
Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Opposition National Union for the Total Independence of Angola, or UNITA, plans to petition the National Electoral Commission for a recount of the recent general election. Citing voter irregularities during the August 24 general vote, UNITA rejected the results announced by the electoral body. According to 97% of provisional results announced by the Electoral Commission, the ruling People's Movement for the Liberation of Angola, or MPLA, has taken a commanding lead with 51.5% of the vote cast and has won 124 of the 234 seats in parliament. UNITA came in second with 44% and 90 parliamentary seats. But the opposition rejects the outcome, saying its parallel tally shows a different outcome. Supporters of the ruling party dismiss the demand, saying it is a waste of time. They also say the opposition party lost in a free and fair vote and should be better prepared for the next general election. For more reaction to the results, I reach Alcide Sakala. He is a top member of Angola's main opposition party, UNITA.
There was a lot of irregularities in this electoral process. We had a parallel counting machine, and our numbers are contradicting with the numbers that were announced by the National Electoral Commission. We did well throughout the country. It seems that the will of the people for change was real, as one can see on the electoral assemblies while we're counting the results, which means that the will of the people reflected exactly in the results that we got from our parallel counting.
Now that your party said there are irregularities, what is the proposal from your party about how to move forward?
Well, what we're proposing is that is recounting of the voters so that we can compare notes with the date that we have, which is in our hands, with those of the Electoral Commission, since there is a lot of contradiction on the number. I think it is a normal process which can be done. I know countries where there was a recounting process, and that's what we have proposed.
But why do you think a recount will prove your point that your party won the majority of the seats in parliament as well as that of the presidency?
Yes, because the counting that we have done, it gives a quite a high numbers than those declared by the National Electoral Commission, because we have all the documents relating to the voting process. We call them in Portuguese atas das operações eleitorais. So we have all these documents well organized. So we are ready to go further with this proposal that was done yesterday by the UNITA president.
Did the Electoral Commission accept your proposal for recount of this election?
Well, as not yet pronounced, and we are going to submit our demands by writing to the Electoral Commission, and then we'll see with the position that will be taken by the Electoral Commission, because we still are within the period of claiming according to the law.
So when do you plan on sending this petition to the Electoral Commission? When does your party plan to do this?
I think the leadership is done at the best, because the time for make these claims is also defined by law. So I'm sure that probably it was already done by the leadership, but you are willing to do so while we are appealing for calm, serenity, as long as the process goes ahead.
What do you say to MPLA supporters who are of the view that because you lost the election, you are claiming there is fraud and that the MPLA has dominated the political space in Angola for the last 47 years? So the power of incumbency was on its side and it was quite popular, and that you just lost the election and should go and prepare well for the next general election. What do you say to that?
Well, I think the MPLA has lost these elections because according to the figures of the National Electoral Commission, they lost 20 members of parliament, which is really, they are really coming down. And as you can imagine, the 46 years in power is too much. That's why the feeling of the people nationwide is for changing, and the change has happened. That's why we are appealing to the institutions of the country just to reanalyze all this process and to give special attention to the claims that we are going to the National Electoral Commission so that things can go back to normal. So that's the minimum that can be done in terms of electoral justice.
Alcide Sakala is a top member of Angola's main opposition party, UNITA. He spoke with me from the capital, Luanda. Kenya's former Prime Minister Raila Odinga and his running mate Martha Karua are asking the Supreme Court to dissolve the Independent Elections and Boundaries Commission, or IEBC. They are also asking for the purchase of new equipment if the court orders a fresh vote. This as the former Prime Minister files a petition to challenge the outcome of the presidential election. The IEBC declared incumbent Deputy President William Ruto as winner of the recent vote with 50.5% of the total vote cast. Odinga came in second with 48.8%. Analysts say a disagreement between commissioners of the IEBC appears to have dented the credibility of the general election. For analysis on the latest political development, I reach Patrick Gathara. He is a political analyst based in the Kenyan capital, Nairobi.
Well, I mean, that was the first time that that's been asked. In 2017, there was the same issue raised with regard to the organization of the election that was annulled at that time. So we wait to see what the evidence is presented of what any shenanigans or any wrongdoing that the commission got up to, whether enough evidence is presented, and more importantly, whether another election is required. Because if a new election is required, I would completely agree with them that going into a new election with the same commission with under the same rules is unlikely to then produce a credible election if this one wasn't.
How are Kenyans reacting to this? Do some think that Martha Karua and former Prime Minister Raila Odinga have a legitimate reason or proof to suggest that the court reconstitute the IEBC?
Well, the fact is, most Kenyans have not actually seen the evidence. What's been presented are the petitions, which make a number of allegations, the attempts to debunk in the public sphere. So I think until we actually hear what the case is and hear all the arguments, it's going to be hard for people to make up their minds. Now, I think I would venture to say most Kenyans don't want necessarily to have another election. I think the disruption that was caused by this one, or the disruption that elections in general caused, is not necessarily something that people look forward to. But if in case there is credible evidence produced that the result that was announced shouldn't have been, or that there was serious wrongdoing, then I think most people would accept, if not necessarily celebrate, a new election, because in the end, what we want is a legitimate outcome.
John Kitongo, the famous anti-corruption campaigner, claimed he had evidence of rigging. You had some commissioners saying that some people had access to the server of the Electoral Commission. All this appears to be controversy that could play in the hands of those challenging the outcome of the elections. Your take?
Well, I'm not sure it actually does. Well, it does raise questions about the security of what the IEBC, of the systems that the IEBC has for providing the public with the with transparency around the election. So in this regard, with the portal that they had set up, we've got to remember that the results of the elections were based on physical forms that were taken to the National Tallying Center and supposedly verified with all agents there. So if they're talking about hacking, it's difficult for me to see how that then influences the physical forms. You know, they've got to show that those were actually changed, because that's what the declaration is based on. That's what the final result is based on. What's on the portal is largely meant to be, yes, a check on what's happening with the physical forms, and also a medium of transparency. And I don't minimize that. I think it's really, really important that if there are problems with that, they need to be sorted out. But I think to say that the election did not actually reflect what was in the physical forms, then they've got to actually demonstrate that. And I don't think, so far, at least as I'm concerned, that I've seen so far any evidence presented that the forms that were being used to verify and tally at the National Tallying Center were wrong.
What are the current expectations of Kenya?
Kenyans in general expect the court to do its work. I think there's an expectation that it will listen to what is presented, to the allegations that are brought forward, look at the evidence that is presented, and then render a judgment. I think there's an expectation that given what the court did in 2017, that there will be a fair judgment that is rendered that will reflect what the evidence presented said.
Patrick Gathara is a political analyst in Kenya. He spoke with me from the capital, Nairobi. Meanwhile, the director of policy research of the Not-for-Profit Committee for a Constructive Tomorrow says the rush by Kenya's Deputy President William Ruto to assume office despite the close and still contested vote risks the East African country's status as one of the most stable democracies in Africa. In an article, Dugan Flanagan argues that the defeat of former Prime Minister Raila Odinga will undermine efforts for political reform. This, Flanagan contends, is due to Odinga's running mate, Martha Karua, a former justice minister and prominent anti-corruption proponent and reformer. To share his thoughts about his article regarding political development in Kenya, I reach Dugan Flanagan.
Aside from all the questions being raised by Mr. Odinga, the mere fact that there was dispute among the election commissioners, majority of the commissioners did not agree with the primary commissioner's decision to and certify the election. So that's one reason. And then, of course, three of those were beaten up, which suggests that, again, we're talking about some, not what I would call civilized, situation. And then I'm understanding that there's now accusations of hacking there's just a lot of, you know, uncertainties about this. And I think it would be good that, you know, we have some outside people look and, you know, look at the election. Seems like, as I recall, the previous election was contested. And then, of course, Mr. Odinga declined to participate in the revote. We know that it's a very volatile situation. We understand there's been some people, been, you know, there's been some violence.
Mr. Flanagan, in your article, you said Ruto appears to want to sweep the ongoing controversy under the rug by calling for unity and proclaiming that he wanted to be a president for all. What do you mean by that?
Well, I'm not sure that the actions by, you know, either side at this point in time are demonstrate any interest in unity. The biggest thing that I see is the lack of participation in the vote by a large number of the younger, you know, voters in Kenya, which actually are the majority of the population. I think they're not satisfied with either candidate at this point in time. And I think it's because no one has actually gone out there and made the case that they're seriously going to address reforms.
So why do you think a loss by former Prime Minister Raila Odinga bodes ill for political reform in Kenya?
Well, again, because Martha Karua, his deputy, I mean, the man is 77 years old. If Martha Karua, who is a known reformer, a known anti-corruption advocate, were to ascend to the presidency, well, I would think that reform would be, you know, a very high priority for her. And as deputy, I think she would, you know, insist that it maintains a high priority within the Kenyan government. Now, because if she didn't have that result, I'm sure she would probably want to resign and protest. That's my take on this thing, you know, based upon her record and things of that nature.
The Elections Observation Group, the local poll observer group, comprised mostly of civil society organizations, backed Wafula Chibukati, the chairperson of the Electoral Commission's declaration of the results, saying they pretty much are the same. Raila Odinga denies it. He's gone to court to challenge the outcome of the election. Don't you think that this process eases tension?
Well, I think that's the whole point, though, Mr. Ruto did not want to have the court look at it. He wanted to get it over with and be done with it and be declared president before any scrutiny of the election results could be done. And I think that's not a very wise course if you want to, you know, if you want to gain and build trust, because it implies that you want to, you know, cover up anything that might be discovered. You know, I would think that he would be generous and say, well, I mean, I have confidence in the vote, but yes, please take a look at it, because I want more confirmation that I actually won, rather than lingering questions. We see in this in the United States the ongoing, you know, bitterness over the uncertainty over questions about election integrity, and election integrity is a difficult thing to achieve in this modern age, you know, with all the ways that shall we say, election results can be both manipulated and influenced.
What are your expectations of what is going on at the moment after Raila Odinga petitioned the court seeking to...
Well, let me put it this way. Was there an option, for example, of saying neither, no one, which basically means the answer is yes, there was. It's called not voting. So what percentage of the people did not vote in the election? And I would suggest that percentage reflects the distrust in the system. And so, again, when you have that kind of disaffection, then you know, the future of the country remains uncertain, because the people who are going to be running the country in the next 10 or 20 years are not confident in the system, no matter which one wins.
Dugan Flanagan is the Director of Policy Research of the Not-for-Profit Committee for a Constructive Tomorrow. He spoke with me from Dallas, Texas, here in the U.S. In Ghana, a company has launched an app that seeks to provide local farmers with information on marketing and sales. The Duapa app aims to facilitate decision-making along the agricultural business value chain. Michael Griffin is the chief executive officer of Ashanti Produce International and owner of the Duapa app. He says it will help farmers do business and receive payment quickly. He plans to soon expand to the rest of Africa. For more on the impact the app is having on African farmers, I reach Michael Griffin.
The DWAPA app basically puts together a coalition of farmers inside the app to have a marketplace inside the app, whereas though the farmers can then now, you know, put their farms on the app, commerce within the app, trade within itself, and then and produce. So that's the actual concept of the app, and being able to then commerce and communicate with each other, and then have some programs like, for example, you have the metric, you know, program. The one thing that we have been really pushing forward is getting provisions and provisional stuff to be able to help the farmers finance their farms. And this is pretty much kind of what the app does as far as microfinancing, microcredit, insurance, those type of things within the app. And then have, again, the marketplace to be able to do transportations and things like that within the app. So that's the bulk of what the app actually does.
Being in Africa, being in Ghana, you've seen some of the challenges that the local farmers face. How beneficial will this app be to and for them?
It will be very beneficial because now you have a marketplace within itself. Majority of the farmers, the poor farmers have, you know, Android phones, and then they can now use the Android phone to be able to facilitate a marketplace within the app itself. It's very beneficial to them because now they don't have to go looking for a marketplace. The marketplace is right there. So in other words, like for example, farmers who have rice, they are able to then, you know, tell us how much actually, how many acres did you have, and how much actually metric tons are you producing? So that's pretty much the primary concept of the app itself.
So, Mike, for farmers specifically, once they utilize the app, how quickly can they receive their money?
It'll be very quick. Right now, what we're doing is that we're putting together some microcredit, you know, financing for these farmers within the United States. So this is something that the interesting part about this app is that when you move into microcredits or financing, it will be done in the United States. This will be a big part of it. So it'll be something that will be available to them as quickly as possible once they verify who the farmer is, the land, and things of nature. Because once you put a profile, we'll actually go into the profile and approve your profile. Once your profile is approved, and this approval process is once we have verified everything of your farms, and that's where things are. We'll be able to then, you know, kind of move from that standpoint.
Apart from Ghana, once this takes root in Ghana, what are the plans to take this across parts of Africa?
Absolutely. And the good part about it is that it will be tangible and approachable at this particular point as soon as you download the app. Any person in any country, any farmer in any country can download the app and get on. It's because it's in the Play Store, it'll be Apple and Android. So if you have an Android phone and then an Apple phone, but pretty much we know that Android is across Africa, you can download the app and you can immediately be in this program. So it'll tell you, you know, what country you are. You can kind of put your information in, and you have to put, you know, your correct information inside the app. So there we can verify everything. And then from that standpoint, then you can go across the board being microfinanced.
What will be your message to farmers or service providers who will be listening to you across Africa and the world about this app?
Well, this app will now give us the opportunity to now touch base across the water into the United States. If you notice that there's a lot of, you know, nonprofit organizations, NGOs trying to figure out how to substantiate and how to move Africa into the diaspora marketplace. This is the way to go into the marketplace. And what we're going to be doing is we're going to be starting with a sustainable project with rice, corn, and wheat. And particularly rice is going to be the first standpoint. And as we know, this is going to be something that can, you know, benefit all of Africa in dealing with food sustainability and food, you know, security. This is the thing, though, Peter. Everybody's been trying to figure out what can we do and how to maneuver within, you know, Africa, but no one has it. But I have the background through API, Ashanti Produce International, and you can then pretty much kind of, you know, see how things are. But at the same time, I meant to put in there where so you can get online, which is duapa.online. So that's how you can, as soon as you go to duapa.online, you can then download the app onto your phone and perfect, then put a profile in.
Michael Griffin is the chief executive officer of Ashanti Produce International and owner of the Duapa app. He spoke with me from here in Washington, D.C. Malawi's government has closed 3 television stations and 6 radio stations for failing to pay annual license fees. The country's media authority is expected to revoke the licenses of up to 30 broadcasting outlets by the end of the year. A local media advocacy group says the action is ill-advised and unfair. For VOA, Lamek Masina reports from the Malawian commercial capital, Blantyre.
Mandy Pondan is the vice chairperson of the Media Institute for Southern Africa in Malawi. She told VOA the shutdowns are shrinking the media space and wash away freedoms and democratic gains attained over the last 30 years. She says Malawi's Communications Regulatory Authority, or MACRA, should consider the economic impact of the closures.
We are looking at an economy that is not doing well. You agree with me that in Malawi now, almost every business has been affected. And obviously, media institutions have not been making much money. And we are coming from a pandemic, which also almost shut down institutions. So we thought maybe MACRA would have been considerate enough in issues like those.
The affected media houses are Rainbow Television, Angariba Television, Ufuru Television, Angariba FM, Capital FM, Sapitwa FM, Joy Radio, Ufuru FM, and Galaxy FM. Recent notices from MACRA show that in total, licenses for 23 radio stations and 6 television stations may be revoked by the end of the year. Some stations paid their fees but are still being shut down. Aubrey Kusakala is a station manager for Rainbow Television. He said his medium has been closed despite settling its $10,000 bill. He feels the matter is politically motivated.
Because we are looking at how we have been treated. We made a payment on the 20th of June. They make a withdrawal of that payment almost 2 months later, meaning to us, they weren't interested in the money. They were interested in our closure. Some of the information that we have gathered clearly show that government through MACRA didn't want us to exist on the market.
Pondan of Misa Malawi says that is worrying.
What is happening now is unprecedented. In the 50 years plus of independence for Malawi, we have never seen a regime shut down media houses as this regime is doing. And it's really denting and it's not reflecting well on the administration. If truth is to be told, everyone knows the role that the media played for this administration to be in power and then to be going through this treatment. It really doesn't feel well. It doesn't feel nice.
Misa Malawi says the shutdowns have eliminated 250 jobs held by media professionals and support staff, and that other 500 people are expected to lose their jobs by the end of the year. Zadziko Mankambu is communications manager for MACRA. He says the shutdowns have nothing to do with press freedom or politics. He says there are conditions attached to the broadcast licenses which must be followed. Among them, he says, is adherence to the timetable for payments.
Moreover, MACRA is one of the agents that has advocated for media freedom. At the moment, MACRA is ensuring that there are more media houses, and as we talk now, there are so many licensees who are waiting to have frequencies in order to start operating according to the law.
Mankambo says MACRA has no plans to reverse its action unless there are changes to the law the authority is enforcing. However, MACRA said the closed media houses can apply for new licenses once they settle their outstanding payments. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre, Malawi.
This is the Voice of America, and you are listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa Sports with Samson O'Malley, and that will be followed by a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs, and music from our African collection. But first, It's now time for Nightline Africa Sports Info. That, let's join Samson O'Malley. Hello, Samson.
Hi, Peter. Good evening, sports fans. Welcome to Nightline Africa Sports. Nigeria's national men's basketball team, the Tigers, on Saturday in Abidjan, defeated Guinea 89-70 in their second match of the International Basketball Federation World Cup African qualifiers. The match played at the 3,500 capacity Palia Dispor Trekeville saw the Tigers bounce back after losing to Cote d'Ivoire 78-66 in the opening fixture. The Nigerian team will wrap up their window 4 of the International Basketball Federation World Cup qualifiers with a game against Angola on Sunday. Also on Saturday, reigning African champions Tunisia fell short to Senegal 73-63 in Monastery, their second loss in 2 days. Despite the setback, Tunisia had a decent start to the game and headed to the locker room leading 40-33. As it stands at the moment, Cote d'Ivoire remains the only undefeated team in the African qualifiers following South Sudan's first defeat on Friday in Monastery. With a record 6 wins from 6 games so far, the Ivorians are getting closer and closer to qualifying for the World Cup scheduled to take place from August 25th to September 10th, 2023 in Japan, Indonesia and the Philippines. In rugby news, world champions South Africa's Springboks produced possibly their worst attacking performance under coach Jack Nienaber as they slumped to a 25-17 loss at the hands of Australia's Wallabies in their rugby championship test in Adelaide on Saturday. While the Bucks dominated both possession and territory to the tune of close to 60%, they never used the chances they had and allowed a poor Australian side to score when they had the opportunity. Staying with rugby news, Kenya superbly recovered to beat England 19-14 and revived their hopes of reaching the Los Angeles Sevens main cup quarterfinals at the Dignity Health Sports Park, United States on Saturday. Kenya had suffered a shocking loss to Samoa in their Pool D opening match. William Ambaka and Billy Odhiambo touched down a try each as Samuel Oliek converted one to give Shujaa a 12-0 lead at the break. Kenya Sevens will take on Scotland in their last pool match later tonight. And now to netball, where the 2023 Netball World Cup qualifiers for the African region was concluded on Saturday. Malawi and Zimbabwe have joined South Africa and Uganda as the continent's representatives for next year's Netball World Cup. The Zimbabwe Gems defeated Zambia 59-41 in the bronze medal match of the African qualifiers on Saturday to book their second appearance in the World Cup. Zimbabwe first participated in the 2019 edition held in Liverpool. Coach Ropoff. And that's it for this week's edition of Nightline Africa Sports. Back to you, Peter.
Thanks a lot, Samson. It's always a pleasure to hear from you. We'll link up with you again next Sunday for another look at African sports. Nightline Africa Sports. Now let's take a closer look at Africa, the problems, the prospect in time of conflict, in time of peace. Here's one man's point of view with Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. Hello, Dr. Jonah.
Good evening, Africa. President Emmanuel Macron of France, facing complex domestic problems at home, took time out last Thursday to begin a visit to Algeria, which he himself termed a very important one. When he announced the trip, the media in France suspected that his main mission was to ask Algeria to supply gas and oil to France and Europe to fill the gap left by the withdrawal of Russian supply to Europe. President Macron represents a generation of French leaders that are not tainted by the bitter history of France's colonial past in Algeria, particularly the brutal struggle of the Algerian people for their independence. This is one reason why President Macron decided earlier to look for a new rapprochement between France and Algeria. The first attempt to do so fell to the ground because the president misspoke when he said that prior to France's commencement of colonialism in Algeria, there was no Algerian nation. That did not go down well to the people of Algeria. Now, after ups and downs, and in his second term, he wants to leave behind a record that he is the president of France that created a new path for both Algeria and France. On arrival in Algeria on Thursday, he was well received by the president of Algeria and most of the people of Algeria. They tend to accept his goal as sincere and hope that he will be able to meet the challenge. This time around, President Macron seems to be focusing on the youth of Algeria, who themselves may have no clear memory of the bitter struggle for independence in Algeria. President Macron said that he wants the youth of France to have a good memory of the Algerians and vice versa. Already, there is a program between Algeria and France whereby 30,000 Algerians go every year to study in France. And now, after the president met with youth leaders in Oran, it has been agreed that they would add 8,000 more to that number. This is because he wants to lay a foundation for this new rapprochement. President Macron also said that while he wants to improve emigration from Algeria to France, he would continue to oppose illegal emigration. As the mission concluded yesterday, it seems that the meeting between the Algerian president and other leaders and President Macron has gone very well. They have signed a number of agreements and they believe that this will move things forward between the two countries. There's an interesting agreement which is called the Truth Commission, where President Macron wants a clean page and to achieve that he thinks there should be a thorough research as the colonial period of France in Algeria. This will be a difficult undertaking because it will be done by French and Algerian intellectuals. But what are all the data? Hopefully, and this is the hope also of most Algerians, this will be a good project no matter how long it will take. One must also bear in mind that Algeria has a strong army in Western Mediterranean. And perhaps Macron is looking to France, to Algeria, to help in the struggle in the Sahel, because France itself and its European allies are now withdrawing from Mali and may play a lesser role. Nothing much was said about oil and gas, but most Algerians believe that Algeria will be prepared to help if its help is needed. In all of the discussion, the Algerian leaders made it very clear that Algeria is not going to change its independence approach in the conduct of foreign relations. So even though President Macron spoke critically of Russia's war in Ukraine, Algeria will continue to maintain the position it took at the United Nations. The next problem will be, how will this all go down in France? Already, the right wing and the left wing in France parties are critical of the approach President Macron is taking. Some believe he's bending too much towards the wishes of the Algerians. History knows that this is a very bitter issue still in France. And one should also remember that the much-reviled President Charles de Gaulle, wartime leader, was consumed by the Algerian war, but was only able to find a path towards independence of Algeria in 1962. So let's hope this new rapprochement is successful and sustained and may become a model of former colonial players with due respect, mutual respect, will maintain cordial relations with a former colony. I thank you.
That was Woman's Point of View, a commentary by Dr. James Juna, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. It's Sunday on Nightline Africa, and this is the time we get to relax and reflect, a flashback with music from the continent.
There's a woman that makes me happy. There's a woman that makes me charge. Who is that special woman? See you.
You can't match the face. Obo she fine from my hair to her cartilage. She dey do my body justice like magistrate. The way she ride it, I don't get the car details. Yeah, but mokbe, chocolate baby. If you dey look and pray, cause if anybody say they want to do some play, you to God do somebody go catch bullet. She we no go start the rock, man. But mine and talkie, part time I'm working. I go use my donkey, outline your body. You go hold my cloth, the shadow, my God. Me, I don't anticipate I'm die. Yeah, you forget to work for the second time. But mine and talkie, part time I'm working. I go use my something, outline your body.
Who is that special woman?
Success on the way, no fit to contest. Me see a nanti, a nanti, a changing. Son of a you, that's all I need to move. No, because I don't get to be single, love. Watch me, is I like every ring, love. Don't be singing, I'm singing, no singing. We are by your face. Yeah, yeah.
We are by your face.
Especially when you are touching, touching me.
That was our Sunday Music Spot. Hope you enjoy the music from Nightline Africa here at the English service of the Voice of America in Washington. Nightline Africa comes to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Hope you enjoy the program tonight. As you know by now, we are on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. From the Nightline Africa team, including producer Kwame Ofori, we say thanks for joining us. And remember, as the elders say, one who causes others misfortune also teaches them wisdom. I'm your host, Peter Clotte in Washington. Good evening, Africa.